Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we just get on with it. Let's just get on with it. Just get on with it. Yes. So I was traveling. I was traveling with my extremely attractive audio engineer this past week. But we came back just to do the show. We came back just for you. Anyway, we're traveling. So we're sitting in a restaurant in a military town. And in walks a young Marine. A young Marine. And how did I know it's a young Marine? Because you can smell them. They smell like shoe polish and wind drift. And so a young Marine comes in and he sits down. And across from him sits a young lady. And it's the young lady who's got the tattoos on her forearms, not the young Marine. It's kind of weird how things have changed. Uh-huh. Yeah, she tatted up the forearm there. And anyway, what are you going to do? Just sit there. You eat your... You can't say anything about it. Be considered rude to ask, excuse me, you're a lovely young lady. Why do you deface your body with all these hideous, satanic-looking designs? You just can't ask that question. You're not allowed to ask that. But that's what I wanted to ask her. But I didn't. I just ate my breakfast, and there you go. Went on with our life. And so will they, I suppose. Someday there'll be a method for removing tattoos completely. And I'm hoping that there'll be a market for that. I really hope so, because if not, the future of Western civilization is, it's not looking good, that's all. The Democrats at the debate last week, there was a disagreement amongst the Democrats about when the end of the world will occur due to global climate change. One of them, I think the homo, said it was 12 years. And the other one, who I think was the socialist, possibly a lesbian, said it would be 10 years. And so I'm not really I don't really buy into the anthropogenic, how do you pronounce that? Anthropogenic. You just try to say it real fast so people, they think you know how to pronounce it. Anthropogenic. Global climate change. You know, I don't really buy into all that. But there might be something to the world ending in 10 to 12 years. There could be some truth to that. As you look on that stage and you see who could be the leader of the free world, any one of those people's disastrous. Disastrous. So there could be some truth to that the world is going to end in 10 to 12 years. And the commies and the Democrats and the queers and the freaks and the weirdos, they might know something we don't. That's why they're so worried about it. Let's just get into the news because I'll give you an update on the bird whisperer later. The bird whisperer is in full bird whispering mode because it's that season, you know. When the bird whisperer comes into contact with a lot more birds. And so we'll give you an update on that. But I want to start with reason number 1,202. To get or keep your children out of the government schools. Some stores, according to CBS, have begun selling bullet-resistant backpacks. Yes, you can now buy a bulletproof backpack in the back-to-school aisle. The back-to-school aisle now has a bulletproof section. So that should just be a red flag to all you young parents out there. Maybe you don't want to send your children somewhere where they need bulletproof anything. The Office Depot and Office Max are selling what they label as bullet-resistant. Bullet-resistant, you see. The lawyers get in there. Bulletproof is a lot easier to say. It's a lot easier to remember. And of course, any reasonable human could assume that just because you say it's bulletproof doesn't mean it's absolutely proof against any bullet. You could just say bulletproof, and we could all assume that if you get shot through this backpack, you have a much better chance of surviving than if you just buy the Pink Panther backpack over there made out of vinyl.
Pink Panther?
Yeah, so I was just at the store. I happened to see one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So anyway, the manufacturer says the backpack can stop a bullet from a 44 Magnum handgun, but it won't stop a high-velocity rifle round like those fired off almost every day for the past week or so. Almost every day. I mean, what do we have? We have two mass murders within 12 hours. One in Ohio. And then, of course, the Walmart in El Paso. I think we've had five mass shootings in the past week or so. Five. And it's just, well, maybe we are going to need to wear bulletproof everything after a while. The manufacturer, the founder of the company that manufactures the bullet-resistant backpack, says he wants the backpacks to make parents and students be prepared rather than scared. Hey, that's a pretty good... That's tag that up for the marketing. Be prepared. Don't be scared. Go march right in there, Junior. Get in there. Put on your bulletproof gear and get off to school. Me, personally, I'm not going to send my children into a place where I feel I need to wrap them in Kevlar or any bulletproof material. Thank you very much. We'll just educate our children at home and bring them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. Where there's no need for bulletproof attire here at the McBurney compound. Nope, certainly not. All right, so there you have it. That's reason number 1,202 to get or keep your children out of the government school, the bullets that are flying around. All right, now we go to the justice file. And we're going to start getting to the root cause of why some of these things are happening. Why is it that young people, young men primarily, are opting to slaughter people? Why is that happening so often? Why? Well, let's start to get to some of the root causes. We're going to investigate and we're going to psychoanalyze Western civilization, as we do fairly regularly here on the Weekly Worldview. This is practically a weekly psychoanalysis of all of us, you and me included. From the Justice File, we have Britain's youngest terrorist. Britain's youngest terrorist is in the news. This particular young man was thrown in jail at the age of 14 for plotting to murder police officers along with another Australian jihadist. He pled guilty to inciting terrorism overseas back in 2015 after he was caught exchanging encrypted messages with an Australian jihadist. And he was convicted of terrorist activity. He was 14 years old. I think I already said that. Well, the plot was foiled by the quick-witted British police. And the young man was put on trial under a pseudonym because in Britain, if you're under 18, everything you do that's bad, you're given what's called anonymity. They don't publicize the crimes of minors. They're not even allowed to use their names. He was given the moniker of RXG. That's who he's been known as in the British media. RXG is on trial, right? For plotting terrorism. Well, the MSN is reporting. MSN? Really? I don't know that I've pulled the story down from MSN. I can't remember the last time. Isn't that MSNBC? I didn't know they actually did news anymore. This is weird. Anyway, RXG, I think they should have called him RGX. RGX is easier to say. RXG is somewhat cumbersome.
Yeah.
RXG. You don't want a word that starts with a vowel in the middle of a phrase. It's difficult. It should have been RGX. We're just going to call him RGX since it doesn't matter. Since nobody cares. RGX, they say, has autism.
Mm-hmm.
And he was given... autism, by the way, is primarily caused by poor parenting skills and lack of discipline. That's the number one cause of autism, in my humble opinion. We'll just move on from that, though. RGX, who has autism, was given automatic anonymity, like the majority of child offenders in Britain, until his current age of 18, at which point the cloak of anonymity is supposed to be lifted off the young man. But his lawyers argued that making his identity public would put him and his family at serious risk of reprisals make him vulnerable to indoctrination by extremists, and most importantly, it would jeopardize his rehabilitation, which they're working so hard on, his rehabilitation, you know. So he's been granted what they're calling lifelong anonymity.
Yeah.
Lifelong anonymity is what he's... So that means nobody ever gets to find out who this guy was. That is until he kills someone or blows something up or cuts someone's head off. And then it may be revealed at that point. But even then, he may be just unbelievable. So they're, number one, he's getting out of jail. He's a convicted terrorist. He's a convicted terrorist, and he's going to get out of jail instead of being executed. And then he's going to be awarded lifelong anonymity. Well, here's the thing, RGX, in case you're listening. Anonymity has an expiration date. And it's called Judgment Day, and you're going to get it, you low-life terrorist. 14 years old is plenty old enough to know the difference between right and wrong, and to know that it's wrong to plot to, he's plotting to behead Australian police officers with an Australian jihadi online. 14 years old, you know that's wrong. And this young man could have been made a fine example of to any other young people who were contemplating murder, mayhem, bloodshed, anything like that. If he would have been swiftly and publicly and painfully executed, that would deter a whole generation of young people. A whole generation of young people could be deterred from plotting terrorist acts. But that's not going to happen. He's going to get out of jail, and he'll probably get a rap contract. He'll be a hip-hop artist. Over, and yes, he'll be the anonymous Dog G. Out of, anyway, let's move on. Speaking of deterrence, so you wonder, why is it that we can no longer send our children into the government schools without fear of them being shot? Now, I don't drop my kids off at the government school every day, but almost everyone else I know does. And I imagine every time they drop their kid off at that school now, every parent every time thinks about their kid being shot. That's just my guess. How could you not? How could you not worry about your kid being shot? And of course, now we got it going on at the Walmart. We got it at the bar. We got it at the garlic festival, for crying out loud. Every time your kid goes anywhere, it's getting scary out there. Well, why is it, particularly in the government schools? Well, I'm going to get to one of the reasons. One of the reasons is the governor of the state of Arkansas and the judiciary in the state of Arkansas, the government school system in the state of Arkansas are responsible in large part for the epidemic of school shootings. Why do I say that? Well, walk with me back to Jonesboro, Arkansas in 1998. This is before Columbine. Does anybody remember this? Drew Grant, 33-year-old man from Jackson, Missouri, was 11 years old when he and another teenager shot and killed four students and a teacher at Westside Middle School in Jonesboro, Arkansas in 1998. It was called the Jonesboro School Shooting, and it was the forerunner of the epidemic of school shootings that came in its wake. Well, Drew Grant, he got out of jail at some point. Not only was he let out of jail, he was tried practically in secret with anonymity. And upon being released from jail after shooting and killing five people, he was let out of prison. And he was allowed to change his name. His name originally was Andrew Golden. And nobody ever knew that because we were never allowed to find out who these killers were, for fear of interfering with their rehabilitation, I suppose. But what they didn't realize when they tried this kid in... And by the way, the only reason that this is in the news is because Andrew Golden, who changed his name to Drew Grant, was killed in an auto accident this past week. He was killed in an auto accident, and now it can be revealed who he was. But he was allowed to change his identity and live amongst us after murdering five people. And that was that. The Jonesboro school massacre and the way it was handled was very instructive to angry young men everywhere. Angry young men everywhere took a lesson from that. Now, the lesson could have been, if you bring a gun to school with the intent of doing harm to someone, you'll be executed. If you shoot up your school, you'll be executed. That could have been the lesson, but no, that wasn't the lesson. The lesson was you'll be tolerated. In fact, this murderer, particular murderer, got out of jail. Drew Grant, born Andrew Golden, massacred four school mates and a teacher at the age of 11. At the age of 11. They don't say who the other teen is. He and another teen. Did you get that? He and another teen. They're not allowed to say who that is either. So we won't find out until Judgment Day or, of course, if he kills someone else, which is a distinct possibility. But there you have it. An opportunity to teach the whole world a very valuable lesson that could have prevented school shootings was missed as far back as 1998, and the just a system has been missing ever since. It's the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back, folks. Welcome back. Yes, back to reality. Two mass murders in 12 hours. Two massacres. Five massacres in the past week. That's not even counting Chicago. There's a massacre a day in Chicago. That's not even counting Chicago. I got an article here written by Maureen Callahan, who I was unfamiliar with up until this point. She writes for the New York Post. If it's a female, and I don't want to imply that it is, don't want to offend anyone. But Maureen has an opinion about angry young men. So she writes that, why is this happening? Why are young American men shooting people all of a sudden, all the time? She says the 19-year-old Garlic Festival shooter may have given us the reason. A witness heard someone shout to the killer, "Why are you doing this?" And his response was, "Because I'm really angry." He's really angry. And here's what Maureen says. She says, "We know this is a specific strain of anger. Deep, depressed, biblically vengeful." Biblically vengeful, she says. "Felt most commonly by young men, almost always white, who report feeling alienated, dispossessed, misunderstood, victimized, and rejected by women. So their chosen outlet is the mass slaughter at places once deemed safe. A violent act meant to hold us hostage in fear." All right. So first off, Maureen. Biblically vengeful. In the Bible, God says, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." So this is not biblical vengeance. This is ungodly vengeance. This is unholy vengeance. But I do take your point about young men feeling alienated, dispossessed, misunderstood, victimized, and rejected by women. She goes on to call this angst in the young white male population our greatest, most stubborn, and pressing threat. she calls for a collective dedication from the White House on down. Oh, because she, I left out all the political pot shots she takes at everyone from the White House on down. But she says we need a collective dedication from the White House on down to figuring out why young men in the world's greatest, most prosperous country are so GD angry, she says. She actually takes the Lord's name in vain at the end of the article. Why are young white men so GD angry, she says. Okay, Maureen. So you messed up the biblical vengeance part. Biblically vengeful, right? Yeah. But why are these? What is going on with these young men? Well, so they've been fed into the public school factory by their parents, who are typically divorced, by the way. They've been abandoned by at least one of their parents. So they're immediately injured. They're permanently injured at typically in the late or puberty age. You know, between the age of, say, 8 and 15 is when most of these young men's lives are ripped apart by the divorce of their parents, number one. And then they're fed into a government school factory where their heart of flesh is taken out from them and replaced with a heart of stone, where they're taught that there is no God. We don't really know where we came from. There's a good likelihood that we are just some form of animal, and that you can feel free to hunt down and have sex with as many other animals as you can. They've been lied to about where they came from. They've been told that if they get a girl pregnant, they can kill the baby.
Which animals don't?
Oh yeah, which animals don't do that? Yeah. Animals typically don't opt to kill their own children. So these young men whose lives are horribly shattered by divorce are then told they should just have sex, and if they run into a problem, killing someone is an option. Mm-hmm. And so this is where we are. This is the fruit of this 50-year experiment with the abandonment of God. That's what this is. This is the fruit. Yeah. I don't know that I can say much more than that. I mean, isn't it? It should be obvious to everyone why this is happening. It should be really, really obvious. But everyone's afraid to say it. Because to point out the actual problem on the part of the media, the governing officials, school officials, to admit it would be admitting that they're responsible for it. And they're never going to do that. Well, until the blood is as high as a horse's bridle, then they might. So she asks, why are the kids so GD angry? It's because your newspaper, the college you went to, Maureen, the whole construct of your life has led these young men to be damned by God. And they feel it. And it's not a good feeling. And you can lie to them and tell them there is no God, but they feel it. They feel damned. And so they lash out in violence and vengeance because, well, it's an option. All right. Very scary stuff. Meanwhile, Jeffrey Epstein, his life may be in jeopardy. Why? Because he's got dirt on Bill Clinton. Well, that's not what this article says, but that's what I say. Anyway, we reported last week that Jeffrey Epstein, world-famous child molester and very rich guy, in that order. Well, it's been reported that his life may be in danger. Last week, you remember, he was reported unresponsive with injuries to his neck. Well, according to this report from The Sun in the UK, which is not that reliable, I'll admit, they say that the injuries around his neck were consistent with strangulation, which most people don't strangle themselves. It's very difficult to strangle yourself. And I'm sure it's unpleasant. So, one of the lawyers representing three of the women that Jeffrey Epstein raped, his name is Spencer Coovin, and he has posited the theory that Epstein may be, He may be a victim of assisted suicide in the not-too-distant future. That's right. He says that Epstein was found sprawled on the floor and blue in the face, and that what happened might have been the interruption of a murder, not an attempted suicide. Koovin believes, according to The Sun, that Epstein knows so much dirt about his rich and famous friends that there may be some individuals willing to organize a hit on him to prevent that information from ever getting out. And this is a lawyer for three of the women that he raped. The lawyer says if Epstein goes on trial, everyone he's been in contact with will ultimately be fair game, and that means Bill Clinton. So unless Hillary isn't willing to kill another person to cover up for Bill's, it could be that Hillary's not willing to kill for him anymore. I mean, although if she thinks she might have a legitimate shot at one more run at the presidency, she'll rub out Jeff Epstein in a heartbeat. Anyway, the lawyer, Koovin, says, I do question whether it was a true suicide attempt. I mean, how do you choke yourself? It doesn't make any sense. There are reports that someone came in after him, but that could just be because he's a pedophile. He says those types of individuals don't last very long in prison. So he could have been strangled by one of Hillary's henchmen, or it could have just been another prisoner who found out he was a child molester. What's that?
And rich.
Yeah, so ready to kill him. So pedophiles don't last too long in prison. So anyway, he was found sprawled on the ground, blue in the face. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. I'm glad to hear about that. At least Jeff will get some taste of just a small portion of the justice that he deserves will hopefully be rained down on in blows upon him by other prisoners. But you know what the government will do instead of allowing Jeff Epstein to be murdered in prison? Which would be a fine example to everyone. I'm not advocating that anyone murder Jeffrey Epstein. I'm just saying if it happened, it would be a better lesson than the justice system is about to deal out with whatever they're going to do to Jeff Epstein. Because if Jeffrey Epstein lives long enough, he will get out of jail again. And that'll be the lesson to everyone. That you can organize, traffic, and rape young women and eventually get out of jail. That's the takeaway. So if Jeffrey were beaten to death with a broom handle in prison, then that could be a deterrent for people. And that would be the lesson. That would be a much better lesson to be taken. Where was I going with that? Did I have a point I was trying to make? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer.
He needs to be killed.
Well, yeah, obviously he needs to be killed. But I thought I had another point there, but, well, maybe it'll come to me as I move on, because at the moment I do not recall exactly what brilliant and insightful point I was trying to make in talking about Jeffrey Epstein being beaten to death. I may just have needed just a little bit of, what do you call it, when you just want to, I needed a catharsis, a cathartic rant, imagining Jeffrey Epstein being beaten to death in prison, which is what should happen to him, but it should be carried out by the parents of the women he raped. That's who should beat him to death, and not in jail. It should be videotaped on live on TV so everyone could see it. Now, that would be a good deterrent, but I think I needed the catharsis of visualizing justice for Jeffrey Epstein. That's what everybody wants. will do. Yes, welcome back. I'm your host, joined in studio by my extremely attractive audio engineer. So glad to have her here. You people are fine too. That's just great. So let's go from visualizing the beating death of a pedophile, because that's unpleasant. You don't want to dwell on those kind of things. So instead, I'll give you an update on the bird Whisper. While out just minding her own business, the bird Whisper came across a starling. A starling is a type of bird. Look it up. So the starling's leg is injured, visibly injured, and somehow the bird Whisper captures the starling, bandages the wounded leg. This is what, a week ago? 5 days ago. Three, four, 5 days ago. Somewhere in there. A few days ago, right? Mm-hmm. So the starling is cared for one night in the triage unit here at the McBurney compound. Spends one night in the clinic, so to speak. And then is released back into the wild the following day after the bird Whisper is satisfied that she's done all she can. And the bird left with a bandage on the leg. Then the next day, the bird Whisper's younger sister, Zoe, finds a nest. There is a nest in the yard. Why is there a nest in the yard? Because we live on the high prairie out in Colorado, where really there would only be buffalo grass and buffalo here, if there and a few antelope, if there were no people. And jackrabbits as big as small children. That's all that would be here. And the reason is the wind gets so enormously, ferociously strong. 40, 50 mile an hour gusts are not unusual on a regular basis. So there's not supposed to be trees out here. And where there's not supposed to be trees, there's not supposed to be birds building nests. Well, a sparrow built a nest and a wind gust came along and apparently blew the nest full of brand new baby sparrows out of the tree into the yard. And Zoe stumbles across and finds them and immediately rushes the entire nest into the bird Whisperer. Where the bird Whisperer makes a analysis. Unfortunately, one of the chicks had already died, and three, I think, were. So anyway, so over the past 2 days, the bird Whisperer has been working feverishly to try to save any of the lives of these chicks who were still wet and slick and pink and didn't even have any feathers. That's how fresh they were. They were literally right out of the egg. Anyway, one of them has held on. And even sprouted feathers last night. So the bird Whisperer has an elaborate system for heating and keeping the bird moist. And it's much more pleasurable to ponder the bird Whisperer's efforts than what's going on in the world. I think that goes without saying. So that's the update. And, you know, the thing about the nest full of sparrows is that had it not been for the bird Whisperer, none of those birds would have made it. So we're happy that one of them has held on now for into day three or four here. And hopefully that one will survive and just continue the bird Whisperer's long-running streak. Oh, that's it. So today, to top all this off, the starling that was repaired, whose leg was repaired 3-4 days ago, shows up again today and allows the bird Whisperer to pick her up, bring her in the house, and show her to mom and dad, where we now can see that the leg is somewhat permanently disfigured, but there's no infection, and the bird seems to be all right. And the bird's friendly with Nicole, lets the bird Whisperer pick her up. It's a wild bird. I've never seen anything like it. Okay, so there you have it. And now I don't really even want to go back to this next story. Do I want to do this? I don't think I can. The rest of this is so awful. Well, here, let me try to just soften the blow. Let's go to Prince Harry, who's the one I thought might be the normal one. Right? Prince Harry's the one who signed up to shoot terrorists out of a helicopter. Yeah, that's longer. That was the one I thought might be normal. Well, no, guess what? He married a whack job from Hollywood named Meghan Markle. And apparently he's been a whack job the whole time, and I just didn't know it. I was holding out hope that someone in the royal family would maintain some level of intelligence and sanity. But no, Prince Harry is just as nutty and stupid as the rest of them. That's right. even the worst on the inbred side of the family, he's just as bad. So him and Meghan Markle have basically come out in an interview with ethologist Dr. Jane Goodall. I don't know what an ethologist is. It seems like I've heard of Jane Goodall, but I can't remember why. So they gave... Oh, I see. Jane Goodall interviewed them for the September issue of British Vogue magazine. Vogue. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Prince Harry and Meghan say they're not going to have any more than two children because they're self-absorbed and they want to travel. Well, no, they say it's because they have concerns for the environment. So if they have more than two kids, they're afraid that they could contribute to the world ending in 10 or 12 years.
Why two?
Yeah, I don't know where they come up off with two, you know. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have two. That sounds kind of selfish. No, it's they're self-absorbed and they want to travel and she wants to watch her figure. That's really what's behind it, I think. Plus, he could be a queer. I mean, he is British. I mean, she's from Hollywood. She could be a lesbian. Just all could be for show. Anyway, so there you go. The prince of what is he? The prince of I don't know what it is. Get out of here. You're only going to have two kids because he's afraid of climate change. Just tell the truth, man. You just want to play video games and buy Aston Martins. She wants to get another acting gig. All right. Meanwhile, let's move from there to the death penalty file. Is there anything more I wanted to say about that?
Yeah.
Just move on. Anyway, kids, don't be afraid to have more kids. So Harry and Meghan might not have the kid who could figure out how to solve climate change. If it were a real problem. All right. Well, climate change is a problem out here on the McBurney compound when the wind blows through at 52 miles an hour. Right? All right. Meanwhile, we go to the death penalty file, where we're going to check in with David Osias Ramirez, who had been serving a life sentence for molesting an 11-year-old girl back in 2013. That is until he met Paul Dixon. Paul Dixon was convicted of murder when he was 17, and they're there in the same prison together. And the other day, Paul Dixon did was he drowned the child molester face down in a toilet. So the child molester received the death penalty for his crime. It was executed upon him by a murderer who he was serving. So even a murderer is like, you did what to a girl and killed him face down in a toilet. That's very appropriate. Very appropriate. Crime expert Ken Jefferson told Newsweek that the convicted child abusers like Ramirez find no peace in jail. Ah, yes, this is. There's a point here I'm going to get to. When men go to jail, says the crime expert, when men go to jail convicted of hurting a child, there is no peace in jail. They have to constantly watch over their back. They have to hope they can befriend someone to look out for them, to protect them. So this, in my mind, is a fate worse than death. It would be much better for the child molester if he were told by the judge, in 3 days, you are going to be executed and you are going to come face to face with your creator. Get ready for that. That would be a much better situation to put a child molester in than to send him into basically a pack of rabid dogs waiting to devour and tear his flesh from his body. And by the way, you know what this means? Do you know what that means when the crime expert says that the child molester has to befriend someone? I'm not sure if you people know what that means, but those of you, anyone who's ever spent any significant time in jail or prison knows exactly what that means, and it's ugly, ugly, ugly what these molesters have to do to defile themselves in order to survive in prison. It's awful. So prison is completely unjust, and it is not appropriate for anyone. It's a fate worse than death. There are things worse than dying. And that molester experienced a fate worse than death for, about 6 years before he was finally put out of his misery, face down in a toilet. All right. You see, I hate a child molester. Hate him with righteous hatred. But that doesn't mean that I have a right to torture him for the rest of his life. Or... And it certainly doesn't mean that I have the right to push him further away from repentance and possible salvation, because God can even save a child molester. So we have an obligation to the criminal to execute justice that is productive and fruitful, not to create an industry of processing people through hell, okay? It's just not right. Okay. Now, let's move on to Candace Bushnell. Are you familiar with Candace Bushnell? He asked. He's extremely attractive. Audio engineer. She has no idea. So neither did I, but she wrote a book and a racy TV series, called Sex and the City. Are you familiar with Sex and the City? Yeah, we've heard of it, but we've never watched it. So anyway, she's the creator behind Sex and the City, one of the milestones along the swirling, sucking eddy of despair, pulling America down the drain. Sex and the City was a giant signpost along that swirling pathway to hell. And I think it was an HBO product, if I'm not mistaken, which would explain why we've never seen it, because we don't allow it in the house. Yeah. It's probably on Nickelodeon now, after dark. Anyway, the creator of that whole mess, Sex and the City, has admitted that she regrets choosing a career over having children. Uh-huh. She's a former sex columnist, whatever that is. She's worth about $20 million, and she's miserable. Yeah. She says in her 30s and 40s, she didn't even think about it. All she thought about was success and making money, making sex jokes. She says, then when I got divorced and I was in my 50s, I started to see the impact of not having children and of truly being alone. Mm-hmm. She says, I do see that people with children have an anchor in a way that people who have no kids don't. Mm-hmm. And she's pretty sad about it, and she's miserable. And the 20 mil doesn't help. Yeah. And now, to add insult to injury, she's dating again. Mm-hmm. How embarrassing is that? Yeah. You're like 56 years old, and you're going out on a date.
She doesn't have any.
You've made some poor life choices if you're in your 50s and you're headed out for a date. I mean, unless your spouse passed away, that obviously that's the exception. Or if your spouse just ran off and you're I don't know. I couldn't do it. No matter what the situation was that left me single, I don't think I could bring myself to actually go on a date at this point. It's just it's like dancing. You just feel stupid. So anyway, she says she's back in the dating game, is how the Daily Mail puts it. She's got a new real estate agent boyfriend. Oh boy, that's bound to be successful. And she's releasing a new book. I'm not going to give the title of her book because I think she's a pig who wrecked the morality for countless millions of young girls with that disgusting, vile TV show. And so, and I'm not glad she's miserable. I'm not happy about it. But I think it's appropriate. I think it's an appropriate place for her to end up so that other young women, of course, they won't read this and find out she's a miserable old bag with $20 million still crying in her beer every night because she's a pathetic, lonesome loser. They'll only see the sex jokes on the sitcom. So... But if this story could be trumpeted around the world, at least it would teach a decent and worthwhile life lesson to some of the young women whose mind this pig corrupted. There. Candace Bushnell, pig. Miserable. All right. Get out of here with that. That's it, the hand clap. Bring the hand clap back. All right, yeah. So anyway, we're not familiar with Sex and the City here at the McBurney compound, but I'm going to give you my one sentence description of what I think it is or was. It's a pornographic account of a woman intent on having sex with every man making more than $200,000 a year in Manhattan. That's just my guess, is what it was. All right. So we go now to the domestic tranquility file, where we're going to check in with Mackenzie Luke. You've heard the story of Mackenzie Luke, right? This is the college student from Utah who landed on a plane, grabbed an Uber or a Lyft, and just vanished, right? Everyone wonders, what happened to this girl? And then they found her charred remains in the backyard of a guy. And that guy's been arrested, of course. He's the killer. But it's been a mystery as to how could this happen? A woman gets off a plane, she gets into a Lyft, and gone. How does this happen? Well, warrants were served on both the killer's and Luke's accounts on the dating app Tinder, as well as another site that bills itself as a way for wealthy sugar daddies to meet up with women who call themselves sugar babies. So this is a computer application designed to facilitate fornication and adultery, is what it is. And this young lady was murdered. She was lured in by a guy who made her think he was a rich sugar daddy. And then she was advertising herself as an available sugar baby. And we all know what this is about, right? And it ended up getting this young woman killed. So imagine what her parents must feel like. Imagine you find out your daughter is basically a prostitute and she's murdered. And you think that she's enjoying a fine liberal arts education out there in university. Turns out she's a polished up hooker who gets herself killed. Just awful. Just awful. So here's the thing, folks. And I'm not sure when we all stopped agreeing on this. Facilitating fornication and adultery is a crime. It should be illegal. You shouldn't be able to have a website designed to facilitate adultery and fornication. And if you think I'm wrong about that, you are incorrect. The people who run this site, who I will not mention this site, the management of this website, their doors should be kicked in. They should be dragged out in the middle of the night with a raincoat over their head in handcuffs. That's what should happen to people who facilitate fornication and adultery. Because when you encourage that type of behavior, some people get killed. Fornication and adultery are probably the two largest contributors to murder in all of history throughout all of the world. Fornication and adultery. All right, so there's really nothing more to say about that. And like I said, if you think I'm wrong about that, you are incorrect. Yes. Let's check in with our good friends over in Japan. They check in with us in the decline and fall file because Japan is in decline and it's really bad. I had no idea it was this bad. But Japanese women, listen to this. Back in the olden days, I'm going to check in with my extremely attractive audio engineer and find out if this is true. Back in the olden days, no, they don't say back in the olden days. They say not even so long ago. Japanese women who remained unmarried after the age of 25 were referred to as Christmas cake. Christmas cake is a slur comparing them to old holiday pastries that cannot be sold after December 25th. You see, over in Japan, they make these pastries specific for Christmas. And after Christmas, they're just, well, they're old news. They're tossed out behind the shop. They're Christmas cake. So that was the attitude maybe 30, 40 years ago toward women who didn't get married. Well, now, that insult no longer has currency. The insults have faded because Japanese women are foregoing marriage. And I read the article, a lot of this has to do with apparently the way the average Japanese husband treats the average Japanese wife. It sounds pretty lousy. I mean, it sounds like the women are basically made to do all the cooking, all the cleaning, all the child rearing, and then all the cooking again, and then there's cleaning, and then there's laundry. And then maybe a beating every once in a while, and then laundry. and then cook me dinner. And then I didn't like that, cook me another dinner. Anyway, it just seems like Japanese women are generally not treated all that well by their husbands, which is not surprising in a pagan culture. Pagan cultures, the women don't fare very well in pagan cultures. And it just sounds like Japanese women are, you know, they're sick of it. And the women are increasingly, according to MSN, two stories from MSN. How did that happen? What did they, are they hiring newsmen over at MSN again? I thought they only had the really mean-faced lesbians over there screaming about the Russian collusion and the war against women. I thought that's all MSN did. No, this sounds like they're hiring newsmen again. They're hiring newswomen again. Newsperson.
Okay.
Newspersons. Anyway, according to MSN, Japanese women are increasingly opting out of marriage, focusing instead on their work. And this is alarming politicians who are trying to reverse Japan's declining population. Japan is headed for a demographic cataclysm as their population ages, and there's not going to be enough young people to take care of the old people. So, well, as recently as the mid-1990s, listen to this. This is shocking. Mid-1990s, 1 in 20 women in Japan had never been married. 1 in 20 women. So now it's 1 in 7. In 25 years, basically. Wow. That's women who have never been married by the time they reach 50. 50-year-old women who've never been married, it's now 1 in 7. Wow. And for women aged 35 to 39, the rate is even higher. Nearly 25% of Japanese women between the ages of 35 and 39 have never been married. Wow. That was about 10% back in the 90s. And now it's over 25%. I'm sorry, it's nearly 25%. Wow. That's the decline and fall file. For all you young people out there, having kids is important, and it's wonderful, and it's rewarding, and, well, it's the right thing to do. I mean, that was the first thing God asked, was be fruitful and multiply. He's like, look, I gave you all this. All I'm asking is that you be fruitful and multiply. Is that too hard? Well, apparently it is. Anymore. And so we go now appropriately from there, from China, or from Japan, we go over to China. There's a new book called One Child Nation. I'm sorry, a new film, I'm sorry, called One Child Nation by directors Nanfu Wang and Xiling Zhang. I'll link to this article. This is disturbing. But for those of you in the audience who may have matriculated in the government schools, you may not be aware that China was somehow bamboozled and told they had to curb their population growth back in the 1970s. So in 1979, they passed the one-child policy, and they sold it to the population, the Communist Party sold it to the population, saying that if they didn't have a one-child policy, meaning families can only have one child, Chinese officials in the Communist Party sold this by scaring the citizens that too much population would lead inevitably to famine and potential cannibalism. Cannibalism. So they instituted this one-child policy, and punishment for non-compliance included the destruction of homes, forfeiture of property and valuables, steep fines, and local family planning officials were given authority to abduct women, tie them up, and force them to undergo sterilizations and abortions. And so these two filmmakers document the one-child policy in this new movie, One Child Nation. And they talk about just often infants were murdered after they were born. And the communists, while all this was going on, women are being kidnapped, forced to have abortions, infants are being killed. The Chinese government proclaimed that the one-child policy would double everyone's standard of living. And so let's look at China from 1979 to 2019. And I think the one thing we would all have to admit is that most people in China, their quality of living has doubled. But at what cost? But at what cost? The movie includes anecdotes about women fighting back against forced abortions. But far more prevalent in the movie are tales about babies being placed in baskets and left on the side of the road or at markets to be snatched up by passersby, or, as was more often the case, infants left to die of starvation and exposure. And then in the early 1990s, the country began allowing foreigners to adopt orphans, and they created a market for Chinese girls. Adoptions quickly became a despicable trafficking racket in which communist family planning officials tore second children away from their homes and gave them to orphanages for a fee, of course, which turned around and sold them to American and European families who ostensibly had no clue they were perpetuating a kidnapping for profit paradigm. So, the economy in China, it has gone up. Gone up quite significantly. But at what cost? China is a criminal enterprise. A criminal enterprise. I was out traveling, and I happened by a Falun Gong tent, and they're handing out literature. And I took the literature, and normally I don't take flyers, you know, but I took this one. And I read what's happened to the Falun Gong in the past 20 years. There's a whole industry harvesting the organs of murdered Falun Gong and Uyghurs and Christians. There's an industry. In China, they have what's called transplant tourism, where people go to get a new liver, new kidneys, a lung transplant, eyeballs. And all these organs are being harvested from the political enemies of the Communist Party. And America, we're in bed with those communist murderers. So we're in it with them up to our necks. Shameful. Very shameful. Hey, but their economy is a powerhouse, right? Here's the thing about the free market. The free market, untempered by the fear of God, is dangerous, and it's evil, and it's wicked. They'll eventually kill and sell. They'll sell people. They'll kill people. They'll do it for money, the free market. The free market must be tempered by the fear of God. So a totally free market is a dangerous thing. I'll move on. We'll jump from there over to the strong delusion file, where there's a weightlifter named Laurel Hubbard. Laurel Hubbard competed for men's weightlifting, competed for New Zealand as a male weightlifter before her transition. So you got a male weightlifter who's transitioned to a female. He's now competing against females, and guess what? He's doing very well. Competed at the Pacific Games. He won 2 golds and a silver. He won a silver? No wonder he transitioned. I mean, come on. He probably wasn't a very good male weightlifter. Anyway, you want a silver? Okay. That was earlier this month. Anyway, this tranny's victory at the Pacific Games has triggered outrage over in where it was held. Where was this held? In Samoa. The Samoans are outraged. As well they should be. You got a tranny coming in there competing against the girls. So, oh, and by the way, this tranny is free to compete at next year's Tokyo Olympics, right? So this should stimulate a conversation that we've needed to have for quite some time about the fact that the trannies have invaded female sports, and we're all expected to sit here and act normal about it. It's about time to start standing up and throwing chairs across the room. This is ridiculous, you people. Have you lost your minds? If you want to lose your mind and commit global suicide, don't expect me to just sit here and act like everything's okay and that you're a normal person. You are insane. You are criminally insane. All of you gender-bending freaks are criminally insane. And I'm not going to sit here and allow you to carry off this criminal activity without calling you out for what you are. You're a bunch of crazy suicidal people. All right. I don't know that I have anything more I can add to that. Speaking of ranting and raving, there's my rant against the trannification and the homosexualization of my civilization. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. It's not normal. It's sick and it's gross and it's perverted and it's disgusting. And I'll say it even if you throw me in jail. Go ahead and throw me in jail for it. All right, that's the Weekly Worldview this week. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at AmericanRightToLife.com, at Real Science Radio, and of course my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.